And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
The entire leadership of the Church of England has united to condemn Boris Johnson's plan to deport migrants to Rwanda as an immoral policy that shames Britain. Just hours after the government won court backing for the first flight to Rwanda on Tuesday, all 25 bishops in the House of Lords, including the Archbishops of Canterbury and York, said deportations and forced returns of asylum seekers were not the way. Whether or not the first deportation flight leaves Britain on Tuesday for Rwanda, this policy should shame us as a nation, they said. The shame is our own, because our Christian heritage should inspire us to treat asylum seekers with compassion, fairness and justice, as we have for centuries. Their intervention comes just days after it was reported that Prince Charles has privately described the government's Rwandan policy as appalling. In face of the Prince's criticism, Boris Johnson defended the plan as necessary to break the business model of people trafficking. He refused to say whether Prince Charles was wrong, but added, "I do think that is the job of the government to stop people breaking the law and to support people who are doing the right thing. That's what we are doing." A government source hit back at the bishops. Once again, they have not come up with any solutions. They say it is immoral, but leaving people to die making perilous journeys at the hands of people smugglers is very immoral. Only 7 migrants at most were due on their first flight on Tuesday, after more than 120 others successfully mounted individual legal appeals against removal, citing human rights breaches or modern slavery. 2 separate attempts in the High Court and Court of Appeal to injunct the flight failed. At the time of this recording, it is unknown how many were going to be on the proposed flight. The bishop's letter in the Times warned that the migrants facing deportation had not had a chance to appeal or see family in Britain, and no attempt had been made to understand their predicament. "They are vulnerable that the Old Testament calls us to value," it added, explaining that evil trafficking must be combated by providing safe routes to the UK to reduce dangerous journeys. "Deportations and the potential false return of asylum seekers to their home countries are not the way," it added. "This immoral policy shames Britain." Filippo Grandi, UN High Commissioner for Refugees, also criticised the plan, stating it set a catastrophic precedent and was all wrong. The UN Refugee Agency, the UNHCR, backed a High Court attempt to injunct and block the first flights. Meantime, on Tuesday, at least 150 more migrants arrived at Dover in various small boats. A German federal court has rejected a Jewish man's bid to have a 700-year-old anti-Semitic statue removed from a church where Martin Luther once preached. The Federal Court of Justice upheld rulings by lower courts on the Judensau or Jew pig sculpture on the town church in Württemberg, one of more than 20 such relics from the Middle Ages that still adorn churches across Germany and elsewhere in Europe. As in those rulings, judges pointed to the addition in the 1980s of a memorial at the site. The case went to federal judges after courts in the eastern state of Saxony-Anhalt ruled in 2019 and 2020 against plaintiff Michael Dürrmann. He had argued that the sculpture was a defamation of and insult to the Jewish people and has had a terrible effect up to this day, and has suggested moving it to the nearby Luther House Museum. Placed on the church about 13 foot above ground level, the sculpture depicts people identifiable as Jews suckling the teats of a sow while a rabbi lifts the animal's tail. In 1570, after the Protestant Reformation, an inscription referring to an anti-Jewish tract by Luther was added. In 1988, a memorial was set on the ground below, referring to the persecution of Jews and the 6 million people who died during the Holocaust. A sign gives information about the sculpture in German and English. The federal court found that, viewed in isolation, the original statue derides and denigrates Judaism as a whole, but that the parish remedied the legal situation by adding the memorial explaining its historical background. That meant the parish had distanced itself from the defamatory and anti-Semitic message of the statue. Despite the defamatory nature of the original statue, the legal system does not demand its removal, the federal court said. It argued there was more than one way to remedy the problem, and a memorial pointing to the Christian Church's anti-Semitic mentality over centuries was one possibility. Even if the church were considered not to have distanced itself sufficiently from the statue by adding the memorial, the court said, the plaintiff could not demand its removal. It said that in cases where there are several remedies to a legal problem, it is up to the party with the problem to choose one. Germany's main Jewish group argued for the memorial to be reworked, and the regional Lutheran bishop signalled that the church will do so. The head of the Central Council of Jews, Joseph Schussler, said the court's decision to allow the statue to stay was understandable, but argued that the memorial and sign do not contain an unequivocal condemnation of the anti-Semitic sculpture. Both the Wittenberg parish and the churches as a whole must find a clear and appropriate solution for handling anti-Semitic sculptures, Mr. Schussler said in a statement. The defamation of Jews by the churches must belong in the past, once and for all. Regional Bishop Friedrich Kramer said the church would support further development of the memorial. He said there is consensus that the memorial and sign today no longer satisfy the aspiration to break the effect of the anti-Semitic statue. For us as a church, there can be no question that we face our history with all its misdeeds and our handling of it, he said. A branch of Ukraine's Orthodox Church that remained loyal to Moscow after a 2019 schism has said it will break with the Russian Church over the country's invasion of Ukraine. Ukraine was given permission by the spiritual leader of Orthodox Christians worldwide to form a church independent of Moscow in 2019, largely ending centuries of religious ties between the two countries. However, many parishes, especially in Ukraine's east, elected to remain loyal under the umbrella of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church Moscow Patriarchate. Following a meeting of its leadership, the church announced that it would declare its full independence from Russia. The council has approved the corresponding additions and changes to the statute on the management of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, indicating the full autonomy and independence of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, it said in a statement late on Friday. The statement condemned Russia's February 24th invasion of Ukraine and the support of Patriarch Kirill, the head of Russia's church, for what Moscow calls its special military operation to combat anti-Russian nationalists. Ukraine says the full-scale invasion was entirely unprovoked. A 2020 survey by the Kyiv-based Razumkov Center found that 34% of Ukrainians identified as members of the main Orthodox Church of Ukraine, while 14% were members of Ukraine's Moscow Patriarchate Church. Ahead of Friday's decision, more than 400 parishes had left the Ukrainian Orthodox Church Moscow Patriarchate in the aftermath of the invasion. The closure of a church which has served its congregation for 1,400 years has been blamed on holidaymakers turning the seaside villages into a staycation destination. St. Madoc of Ferns, located close to a seaside resort in Pembrokeshire, will close in just a few weeks after the parish, founded in 583 AD, has its flock fall to just two. The church, one of Britain's oldest parishes that has served the area for 1,400 years, has had an influx of second homes in the area, as well as young people who are no longer attending. The last two parishioners, who say they are too old to carry on, both help out as church wardens, share their vicar with other churches, and have services every few weeks. Figures in 2020 showed that Pembrokeshire has one of the highest rates of second homes in Wales, with nearly 1 in 10, a total of 4,072 dwellings, recorded as a second home in the county. The post-COVID trend to buy holiday lets, second homes, and move out of London has priced many young people out of housing market altogether. There is hope that St. Madoc of Ferns can be turned into an arts and history exhibition centre. A group of volunteers are now looking for funding to clear the damp and pay the bills in the church in Harrowston West. and if the volunteers failed to transform the building, it could fall to ruin or be bought by developers and turned into a home. Churchwarden Jane Main, 78, said, "We are very sad to have to see it go. It's going to be declared redundant. I've been a warden for most of the 30 years I've lived here, but now I have trouble getting down the steps. My husband has Parkinson's, so he can't do it, and the other warden, Diana Thomas, is 80. It used to be we'd have 30 to 40 people, but now it's declined, and young people aren't coming anymore. There are 55 homes in the parish. A lot of them are holiday homes now, though some of them do come to church and help out financially." In November, Pembrokeshire Council voted to double the tax on second homes amid debate that they were contributing to a dwindling housing stock. The Welsh Government has also taken similar steps, and from April 1, 23, will insist that self-catering properties are let for at least 182 days each year in a move critics say will decimate the Welsh tourism industry. At the moment, lets only have to pay the cheaper business rate if they are used for 70 days. But from next year, they need to let them out for at least 182 days, or they will have to pay more expensive council tax. The parish is named after St Madoc, who was born in 558 in Templeport in Ireland's County Cavan, before he came to Wales as a disciple of St David, the patron saint of the country. He became known as one of the three most faithful disciples and had a reputation as a miracle worker. It is believed he founded the Pembrokeshire Church in 583 before returning to Ireland and becoming a Bishop of Ferns in Wexford. The church was mostly rebuilt in 1883 on its medieval foundations, with the south wall and medieval font being the only features to have survived, and it will hold its final service on July the 31st. And finally, during an impassioned sermon about death and final judgment, Pastor Jamie said forcefully, "Each member of this church is going to die and face judgment." Glancing down at the front pew, he noticed a man with a big smile on his face. Pastor Jamie repeated his point louder, "Each member of this church is going to die and face judgment." The man nodded and smiled even more. This really got Pastor Jamie wound up. He pounded the pulpit emphatically when he came to the ultimatum, "Each member of this church is going to die and face judgment." Though everyone else in the congregation was looking somber, the man in front continued to smile. After the service was over, Pastor Jamie made a beeline for the man. "I don't get it," Pastor Jamie said in frustration. "Whenever I said each member of this church is going to die, your smile just got bigger. Why?" "I'm not a member of this church," the man replied.
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.